Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, January 4th, 2005. There is no reason for a single individual to get killed in a tsunami, stated Professor Tad Murty of the University of Manitoba and president of the Tsunami Society. He said this and went on. Since most areas had anywhere from 25 minutes to 4 hours before a wave hit. So once again, said Professor Murty, because of indifference and corruption, thousands of innocent people have died needlessly. Professor Murty was quoted in the Calgary Sun, December 28, 2004. Tsunami. Tsunami disaster and the crisis of humanity. As of January 3rd, CNN reported nearly 155,000 people have been killed. There's threat of epidemic and over 5 million people have been displaced. The tsunami hit 12 countries, some 2,800 miles from the epicenter of an earthquake off the coast of northern Sumatra, Indonesia. Indonesia, more than 94,000 people have died already, confirmed deaths. Sri Lanka, more than 46,000, with 14,000 still missing. India, the death toll is near 10,000, but still almost 6,000 people are missing, 5,600 of them on the outlying Andaman and Nicobar Islands. Thailand, 5,000 dead, with almost 4,000 still missing. Malaysia, 66. Maldives, 82. Myanmar, 59. Tanzania, 10. Bangladesh, 2. And Somalia, over 2,800 miles from the epicenter, 114 people, according to UN reports. Kenya, even there, a death. And the Seychelles Islands have unconfirmed reports of deaths. 12 countries, some 2,800 miles from the epicenter. Tsunami disaster and what this means for the crisis of humanity. Ralph?
Maya, there has been much discussion about the inability to have predicted this event and the inability to have warned the countries who were most immediately affected and impacted by the calamity. But what we learn here, and it's important to understand that the press in Asia has not failed to note this, is that a governmental agency in Australia, Australian Geoscience, which is directly linked not only to the Australian governmental authorities and its military, but to the intelligence agencies themselves, modeled in September of 2004 a tsunami resulting from an earthquake that would hit the northwest corner of Sumatra, notably Banda Aceh, and induce a tsunami that would roll out through Thailand, Sri Lanka, and through the Indian coastline. In fact, the modeling by Geoscience is so extraordinarily prescient that the actual point of submersion on the northwest coast of Sumatra and Banda Aceh corresponds one-to-one with the model that was outlined by Geoscience in September 2004 with the precise unfolding of that event.
The September issue of AUS Geo, that's AUSGEO News, is online. The rates of wrath, nature's effect on the built environment, is the title of the article. And what these geoscientists did is to model a tsunami that took place off the coast of Sumatra in the 1800s, and that is the 1833 Sumatra earthquake. Earthquakes are not unknown in the Indian Ocean area, and also volcanoes. In fact, The largest tsunamis in the area, 1833, 1861, and the Krakoa volcano, created enormous tsunamis in the Indian Ocean basin. In fact, the geoscientists in Australia state that while it is through historical information considered that the earthquakes in that area were anywhere from 8.3 to 8.8, their estimation is that the earthquakes were even higher. They were 9.2, and that, they say, is based on a recent study that used the growth ring records of coral microatolls to estimate the uplift. It is the uplift created from these undersea earthquakes that create the tsunami. The tsunami, as you may have realized from the news reports, is a long wave, undetectable in the deep ocean. But when it hits the shoreline, the beaches, it creates a great deal of power and uplift with waves of 30 feet to even 100 feet high. The great power and devastation just overtaking whatever is in sight on these beaches. What the Australian scientists of the Geoscience Agency say is at this point, for instance, in Australia, which had its northwest coast unpopulated for the most part and undeveloped, at this point in history, it is developed and it has a population. In fact, it is the site of oil and gas exploration and development. As a consequence, it is of economic significance for Australia to have a tidal warning system, a tsunami warning system. And yet, throughout the Indian Ocean basin, there has not been a warning system. Ralph?
Well, Maya, I think it's necessary to reflect what hasn't been reported in the United States. The ways in which the repress in Asia has responded to the knowledge that this tsunami and the earthquake that precipitated it was modeled with great precision by a governmental agency with expertise in September of 2004. On December 29th, in the prominent Indian newspaper, the India Daily, Balaji Reddy, their special correspondent, wrote as follows. Is there a human hand behind the earthquake and tsunami? It is time for the Indian Navy to investigate. Was this an earthquake creation that ran out of control? Many countries are working on methods of creating massive earthquakes as a way of addressing enemies. The technologically advanced countries we know have worked on this project. If an earthquake and tsunami can be created artificially and directed to specific enemies, it can literally create havoc. Weather control, controlling electronic plate movements, electromagnetic wave simulated weaponry are on the table of many countries. Many around the world are puzzled by the fact that the tsunamis did not happen prior in South Asia on this scale. Also as perplexing is the fact that tsunamis traveling 1,000 miles at a speed of 500 miles an hour, smashing the coastlines of South and Southeast Asia, occurred where tsunamis of this nature have not happened in the recent past. There are technologies on the research table that are used to create electromagnetic effects and release gravitational impact, which can cause this kind of massive Earth movement. And this article continues quite seriously and states, the level of devastation and the particular circumstances which surround it and the fact that India is a regional power in South Asia requires the Indian Navy as an obligation to investigate this and report to the world what they disclose. Now, this, I have to say very clearly, is somewhat more than a speculation. On April 28, 1997, the Secretary of Defense of the United States government, William Cohen, gave a keynote address at a conference on terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, and U.S. strategy at the Georgia Center of the Mahler Auditorium in the University of Georgia in Athens, Georgia. It was part of the Sam Nunn Policy Forum, and Secretary Cohen was joined by Senator Sam Nunn, who is a particular expert on military intelligence and advanced planning, and Senator Richard G. Lugar. And what's interesting about this particular high-level discussion is that William Cohen, the Secretary of Defense, made the following statement in his description of the need to prepare for a generalized war on terror. This is 1997. James Woolsey is here, he stated, to address this question. We have to examine the necessity to prepare for a generalized war on terror. Countries are trying to construct Ebola viruses and very dangerous phenomena. In fact, there are scientists in laboratories devising types of pathogens that are ethnic specific and can eliminate certain ethnic groups and races. And then there's the engineering. The engineering that entails engaging in eco type of terrorism that will alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes, and other consequences through the use of electromagnetic waves. The Secretary of Defense reports in 1997, imputing this prospective extraordinary technology to unnamed centers of terror. Well, what we have to look at here in relation to this, I believe, is the discussion of such as Rosalie Bertel, the noted scientist, about a phenomenon known as HAARP. HAARP is a governmental, scientific, and military investigative and exploratory operation called High Frequency Active Oral Research Program. From a military standpoint, Michelle Chesedovsky described the work. HAARP is a weapon of mass destruction. It constitutes an instrument of conquest capable of selectively destabilizing ecological systems through entire regions. Dr. Rosalie Bertel stated the U.S. military scientists are working on weather systems as a potential weapon, a means of enhancing storms, of inducing earthquakes, and of creating calamities that have political and military impact. The HAARP program, which is advanced and is a technological undertaking that the U.S. authorities have done at the level of highest security, is an ongoing operation. It is not possible to ignore the implications of this for the disaster that we are confronting and the modeling of this 2 months prior, or I should say 4 months prior, in September of 2004.
Maya. Ralph, earthquakes off Java have caused large tsunamis in recent history. 1994 in Java, 1977, the Sumbawa earthquake, respectively. These events, noted Geoscience in Australia, caused little damage in Australia and no lives were lost. But that wouldn't be the case today. Yet, these earthquakes off Java did cause the loss of life within Indonesia. And it is ignoring the impact of these earthquakes and of the respective tsunamis that I think we have to deal with today. As Geoscience says, there are throughout the Indian Ocean large tectonic plates that are moving each year, inch by inch. And it is the release of this energy, naturally, that causes earthquakes to occur. One plate, usually composed of heavier oceanic material, dives beneath the other, generally lighter plate of continental material. The seafloor displacement, which happens so quickly that it is initially reflected on the ocean surface, causes a disturbance to the sea surface, which propagates outward as a tsunami. As you mentioned, Ralph, the waves can travel at very high speeds, up to 500 miles an hour. And yet, they would only be a very small displacement of the water in the deep ocean. But as it approaches shallow water, that is, the water of the beaches, the wave speed slows dramatically, and the height of the wave, because of the power that is unleashed in the deep ocean, can increase 30 feet or more, and can reach levels of even 100 feet. It has been estimated by some that the power of this earthquake was at 20,000 times the atomic bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima. And some estimations have the might of this earthquake as almost 1 million bombs that would have been dropped on Hiroshima. There is that much power in the release of energy. This would have been noted throughout the world, and it was, particularly in Hawaii, where there is a tsunami warning center. A tsunami, the Japanese word for a harbor wave, occurs about once every decade in Japan, and has through the result of earthquakes that took place in Alaska and earthquakes that took place in Chile, caused death and devastation throughout the Pacific region. As a result, a Pacific tsunami warning system involving 26 countries was established in Honolulu, in Hawaii. And it was at this center that at 2:59 Hawaii Standard Time on Christmas Day, which would have been Sunday, the day after, in Indonesia, a large earthquake occurred and was noted, occurring off the coast of Sumatra. The warning signal was recognized by the earthquake center, the tsunami center, 3 minutes later. 3 minutes after the earthquake hit off of Banda Aceh and the coastal cities. It was noted that it had affected Malaysia too. A half hour later, the tidal wave hit Phuket and the Thai coastline. That's one half hour from the initial quake. An hour later, or an hour and a half after the initial quake, the tsunami hit Sri Lanka. And 15 minutes later, it hit the Indian coastline, the eastern Indian coastline. We should note that after the initial tsunami hit Thailand, that is, an hour later hitting Sri Lanka, it still took longer to get to the other side of the Sri Lankan island. The tsunami reached the Maldives island 3 hours after the initial moment of the Banda Aceh earthquake, and it took 10 hours to reach the coast of Africa. If you look at this timeline, you see that there was time for each of these national governments to take action, and foremost for the United States, whose State Department and the Navy had been informed to reach government officials at the highest level, not just the bureaucrats who work and the scientists who work in the geophysical agencies of Thailand, of India, of Sri Lanka, but to reach the highest levels of state, to set out warnings, whether by television or by radio, to the beach and low-lying coastal areas of each of these countries. Let us go back to what was said by Professor Tad Mertry, the president of the Tsunami Society. In this day and age, there is no reason for a single individual to get killed in a tsunami, since most areas had anywhere from 25 minutes to 4 hours before a wave hit. So once again, because of indifference and corruption, thousands, and now reaching over 150,000 people, innocent people have died needlessly. The president of the Tsunami Society is speaking of the 21st century. This is not 1833. This is not 1861. This is 2005. Ralph?
Well, the issue that you raise is one that has been preoccupying a number of people. The World Socialist website, in its article by Peter Simons on January 3rd, the Asian tsunami, why were there no warnings? You mentioned 150,000 people. It's 5 million people who have been displaced as a consequence of this disaster. 5 million people, and the deaths through epidemic disease, and the deaths through starvation, and the death through the devastation of infrastructure of already impoverished people will not be calculated in terms of this tsunami, but will be directly the result of this disaster, which is called a natural disaster. Why, indeed, were there no warnings? Lives could have been saved. The World Socialist website states, if a tsunami warning system had been in place with just 15 to 30 minutes notice and clear directives to flee, most people who had no idea what was happening or how to react would have escaped to safety. Now, what's interesting about this rather detailed article with a timeline by the World Socialist website, who states, we spoke to the State Department Operations Center and to the military. And indeed, what is revealed here is that the United States Navy and the State Department and the military were informed immediately by the Hawaii Center for Monitoring Earthquakes and Tsunamis of the consequences and of the impact here. And indeed, the seismologists in Thailand registered a Sumatran earthquake almost immediately after it took place. They met 1 hour before any impact in Thailand. 1 hour before was the meeting in Thailand, and that is 2 hours before the impact in Sri Lanka, plus another hour before it reached the other side of the island of Sri Lanka. So we have here 1 hour, 2 hours, and 3 hours. 1 hour before Nicobar was struck, the wave took up to an hour to sweep around the island and the south and west coast of Sri Lanka. But the Indian authorities confirmed that 1 hour before Nicobar was struck, they had been presented with indications of what was at work here.
In fact, Ralph, the Indian Air Force Chief, Krishna Swami, told the Indian Express, the last message from Kar Nicobar base was that the island is sinking and there is water all over. The chief instructed his assistant to alert New Delhi, which he did. He alerted the former science and technology minister, but no further action was taken. Let's look at Indonesia, where the earthquake had its epicenter and where the tsunami first struck, in the northern coast of Sumatra. According to an article in Nature, the scientific magazine, there is seismological equipment in Indonesia capable of providing an early warning, and this is on the island of Java. As I mentioned before, there have been earthquakes and tsunamis that resulted from earthquakes from with an epicenter in Java. And this seismological equipment was installed in 1996. But priorities in Indonesia are towards the military and the suppression of the population, and not towards these saving lives. And consequently, there was no telephone line at this important earthquake laboratory. Ralph?
Washington was aware that a deadly tidal wave was building up in the Indian Ocean, writes Michel Chasadovsky. In fact, the United States military and State Department were given advanced warning. The Navy base on the island of Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean was notified immediately. But the fishermen in India, Sri Lanka, and Thailand were not provided with the same warnings as the United States Navy and the U.S. State Department. And what indeed did the State Department and the Navy, what we're talking about is the decision makers in the United States government in this capitalist state, what did they do with this knowledge sufficient for them to alert immediately Diego Garcia sufficient for them to take military response to the prospect of some event that would impact it, Diego Garcia, which is one of the principal bases for B-2s and B-52s, and where the torture brigades operate with those who are ghost detainees and who are sequestered from Iraq and from parts of the world to Diego Garcia for their torment. What indeed did they do? They did nothing. What would it have required if this were of a state interest to the American authorities to pick up the emergency phone to their counterparts in the Indian government, in the Sri Lankan government, in the Thai government, let alone the Indonesian government, and the state? You have an emergency on your hands. We are at your disposal. Mobilize immediately. You have 1 hour. You have 2 hours. You have 3 hours. Use the television, use the emergency radio interrupt system, use your means of communication by telephone to the tourist hotels, to the police and military authorities in the region. These are areas of impoverished populations. You can be damn sure that the military and the police monitor and control. What did it require to alert people? Word of mouth alone, spreading the prospect of an imminent calamity, of a tsunami of 10, 30, 50, or 100 feet descending on beach areas, would have led people to take immediate flight action. There isn't any question whatsoever that the State Department, the United States military, opted to do nothing, opted to be silent, failed to mobilize, failed to notify. By deliberate inaction, they took a very specific action which condemned these populations to the fate that we are witnessing now.
Ralph, not just the United States government, the Australian government, which acknowledged to the Pacific Tsunami Center that it, in fact, had registered the earthquake. And given that the Australians had modeled the effect of the tsunami based upon the 1833 Sumatra quake, which is very similar to what occurred now, the Australians could have predicted with great precision what would have been the impact of this earthquake, that in fact it was not going to be a localized event. Let's look at Thailand, another country that the Worldwide Socialist Web discusses, and in fact has been discussed in Australian newspapers and recently, yesterday, on CNN, where CNN reports, "Expert, I tried to warn of tsunami." Everyone is speaking about Samith Dama Saroj. Monday, he said, he was sure a tsunami was coming as soon as he heard about the massive December 26th earthquake off Indonesia's Sumatra Island that measured magnitude 9, the world's biggest in 40 years. Dama Saraj says, "I tried to call the Director General of the Meteorological Office, but his phone was always busy. I tried to phone the office. It was Sunday and no one was there." Now, Dama Saraj is someone who understands tsunamis. He was the former chief of the Meteorological Department, and as a result of his then position and his information and knowledge about tsunamis, he has now been appointed by the Thai government to set up an early warning disaster system. He said to CNN, "I knew that one day we would have this type of tsunami. I warned that there would be a big disaster. The tsunami took just 75 minutes to hit the beaches and islands of Thailand's Andaman Sea coast. That's 375 miles from the earthquake's epicenter." In fact, Mr. Dama Saraj had, over the past years, not only been warning the Thai government had banned him from being on the coast where it was building its new resorts for the European clientele, the Swedes, the Germans, the Norwegians, and many Americans and other Europeans who frequent the islands in the Andaman Sea and the coastline of Thailand with these new mega resorts and smaller cabanas. Ralph?
Well, Maya, I think we have to look carefully at what we're dealing with here. Of course, we are going to describe in a certain context the generalized, not mere indifference, but the generalized hostility to the well-being of the mass of humanity when you have 1 billion people living on less than a dollar a day. In resource-rich areas such as Banda Aceh, the military and governmental authorities not only don't give a damn about these populations, but these populations are a permanent obstacle to the securing of these resources without confrontation and without resistance, as the rebellion in Aceh so amply manifests. But it's not particular to Banda Aceh. It is worth noting that the U.S. Navy was fully aware of the deadly seismic wave, writes Michelle Chasadovsky in Global Image.
Ralph, we're going to pause for a station identification, and we will return to this important subject.
Yo, this is Michael Franti from Spearhead, and you're listening to non-commercial radio in New York. WBAI is the place to turn to.
Oh my God. And my mother got a sibling suicide singing, oh my, my God. And my mother got a sibling genocide singing, oh.
Listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Tsunami Disaster and the Crisis of Humanity. Ralph?
Yes, Maya. Well, I was indicating some of the work that has been done by Michelle, our colleague Michelle Chasadovsky, and others, to indicate that the United States Navy and military had prior and full knowledge of the magnitude of this event and all of its implications. The military has its own advanced systems, including satellite images, that enable it to monitor in a very precise way the movement of seismic waves in real time. They monitor the ocean floor for submarines. They monitor nuclear testing. They monitor it for potential activity by other powers. They register every particular of what is taking place in such strategic areas. Moreover, United States Strategic Naval Base on Diego Garcia was notified instantly, although directly in the path of the tidal wave. If you look at the chart, the Diego Garcia military base reported no damage. Now, one of the few places in the Indian Ocean that was contacted immediately was Diego Garcia. And then, in so contacting, the authorities reported to the New York Times on December 28th, finding the appropriate people in Sri Lanka and India was harder. According to Charles McCreary, director of the Pacific Tsunami Warning Center, we don't have contacts in our address book for anybody in that part of the world. Only after the first waves hit Sri Lanka, did workers at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Pacific Tsunami Warning Center and others in Hawaii start making phone calls to their counterparts in various places. But they didn't pick up the telephone. They were hard to reach. We just don't have a contact in place before we can just make a phone call. Dolores Clark, spokeswoman for the International Tsunami Information Center in Hawaii, said, we were starting from scratch. Starting from scratch? The Navy, the military, Diego Garcia contacted, the State Department informed instantly, but they're starting from scratch? Now here's a response from MSNBC from the government of India. India says they will set up a tsunami warning system in the future. Australia said it was ready to help any such regional moves. Geoscience Australia, I'm quoting from MSNBC, has a very sophisticated capacity for measuring earthquakes in the region, which can be enhanced to assist with developing a tsunami warning system for the Indian Ocean region in coordination with other countries, Foreign Minister Alexander Downer said. I know it looks a bit like closing the door after the horse has bolted, unquote. But what MSNBC does not disclose in citing the capacity of Geoscience Australia with its sophisticated capacity for measuring earthquakes and the tsunami consequences is that they did exactly that in September of 2004 and headed down to the last particular, including the areas where it would hit, the degree of inundation, affecting Sumatra and Banda Aceh, and as well the precise unfolding of the tsunami wave through the Indian Ocean up to and including the coastlines of India, Sri Lanka, and Thailand.
In fact, at international organizational meetings over the years, a tsunami warning system had been proposed, but the countries of Indonesia and India and Thailand and Sri Lanka didn't want to set it up. As the Japanese expert Takehiko Yamura of the Private Disaster System Prevention Institute in Tokyo told MSNBC on December 29th, quote, "The Indian Ocean and its surrounding areas are nests of earthquakes, and therefore tsunami warning systems should be installed there as soon as possible." Over and again, we hear in the press that one of the reasons there was no tsunami warning system is that there haven't been tsunamis in the Indian Ocean. But that is not the case when you start reading the geological and the seismic information and science that is available easily on the Internet. As I mentioned before, Java, the coast of Java, Indonesia, and the earthquakes that created tsunamis. In fact, in August 1977, according to an article by George Pararis Tarayinis that had been given at one of these tsunami forecasting and seismological conferences, in August 1977, a large earthquake in the Lesser Sunda Islands, Indonesia, generated a destructive tsunami which killed hundreds of people on Lombok and Sumbawa Islands along the eastern side of the Indian Ocean. Now, let's note that while this is hundreds, you can have thousands and more than thousands as we have now. Look at the tsunami that took place from a large earthquake in the Moro Gulf in the Philippines on August 16, 1976. Now, I mention these tsunamis because this is recent history. This isn't even the 1830s. But if a tsunami existed in the 1830s, you know because of the earth forces that it will strike again. The tsunami waves as a result of the earthquake in the Philippines, in the Gulf, off the Philippines, that's the Moro Gulf, killed 8,000 people in Mindanao, left another 10,000 injured and 90,000 homeless. Again, we have to note that both Thailand and Indonesia are actually part of the tsunami warning system in the Pacific and received notification of the earthquake. But most of all, Australia is a country that had been modeling just this type of disaster and what it would mean in the Indian Ocean basin. 5 million displaced, 12 countries affected. As the United Nations states, more than 1.8 million people will need food aid, and not just for one day or one week, but for many months to come. 30 countries and millions of individuals have joined in a global campaign. $2 billion has been raised now. But at first, this was not forthcoming. In fact, the United States was offering just a few tens of thousands, which soon was increased to 15 million, then 35 million, and then 350 million. We should note that 350 million is all that the United States government has in its budget for foreign disaster aid. So, what has the United States President George Bush done? He has called upon the people of the United States to come up from their individual contributions to handle what should be, across the world, a state function. That is, instead of having the governments of the world handle what should be disaster aid, it is again the privatization of social service. Privatization, relying upon disparate organizations such as the Red Cross and others to handle what should be a state function, showing again once again the limits of capitalism.
Well, Maya, I think that's an important point. The NGOization of social responsibility, which is nominally and normally the activity of a state responsible to its citizens. But in regard to this attempt to privatize everything and to deny the responsibility of state authority and for the well-being of its population, there is one significant area where the state is forever present. And before we deal with this question of the nature of aid and its real function here, I want to, just for a moment, continue on this discussion of what we're dealing here with Geoscience Australia and the entire modeling of exactly the disaster that has unfolded, and then the agnostic and hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil response of the authorities when, with hours before the disaster hit Thailand, Sri Lanka, and India, nothing was done at a state level to alert, to mobilize, to organize a response that could have saved not a few, but almost entirely all of the lives that have been lost. Pine Gap, Australia, near Alice Springs, employed nearly 1,000 people from the Central Intelligence Agency and the National Reconnaissance Office. Originally codenamed Marino, it is the ground station of a satellite network that intercepts telephone, radio, data links, and other communications around the world. The facility included a dozen radomes, a 5,600 square meter computer room, and 20 service and support buildings. Its ground antenna, part of the United States Defense Satellite Communications System. This is a highly sophisticated, advanced military technology operation that is based in Australia and which enfolds the Australian government in its activities. Geoscience and the Australian government's modeling of events off the coast of Australia, particularly with respect to such events as earthquakes and tsunamis, is directly related to this military intelligence work. The United States has three major bases in Australia, one in South Australia near Woomera, another in New South Wales, and the third, by far the largest, located about 230 kilometers, 143 miles of the geographical center of the continent, not far to the west of Alice Springs, at the foothills of the southern slope of the McDonald Range. This completely underground operation with visible entrances to the surface, this top-secret base, financed by the United States government, is known as the Joint Defense Space Research Facility. Its aim was research for supposed development of a space defense technology. Its primary purpose was research into electromagnetic propulsion. Electromagnetic propulsion. What we're looking at here with respect to geoscience and with respect to Australia and respect to this system pertaining to tsunamis and earthquakes is military intelligence, and it's at a high level indeed. If you want to understand the dynamics of what's unfolding here, we need to go to who is involved, who is modeling, who is coordinating, who is alerting, who is failing to do the same.
And also, who is responsible for organizing the aid. In Indonesia, where in the Aceh province there has been a struggle for liberation that predates the formation of the Indonesian state with the Indonesian revolution against Dutch rule, because Aceh was a stronghold against the Dutch as well. The Indonesian government, which has had military rule and then in, what they call a civilian form of military rule in Aceh, and has had mass murder and human rights violation throughout since the 1970s, instead of putting a civilian disaster coordinator in charge of the relief efforts, the Ali Shihab, the government senior disaster response coordinator, stated last Sunday that he had appointed Major General Ambang Darmono to take command of the relief efforts, and that included a distribution and the collection of bodies in Banda Aceh. But, in fact, what they are doing is continuing the military incursion into Aceh province. But let us look at the attitude of Alwi Shihab. When visiting two towns by helicopter on Sunday, this is with helicopter oversight, he said he saw, quote, no signs of starvation or frustration with the logistics. I can guarantee you there is no starvation except for me, he stated, because I didn't have lunch today. Now, this was at a news conference in Banda Aceh, and it was reported by Edward Cody in the Washington Post on Monday, January 3rd. After what the little we have seen on television and what we read in the newspaper, the callous response of the Indonesian government is first and foremost what is being revealed. But let us look, because what has happened with the world response to the events of the tsunami disaster. At first, we had the United Nations official, Eglund, reporting that there was a stingy response of the world towards refugees, and there was an attack upon him. But, in fact, if we look at what is created throughout the world, not by natural disaster, but by imperialism, and the creation of wars within nation states around the world. We note, if you go to the sites of refugee organizations on the internet, certain key statistics. Among them, that the total number of refugees and asylum seekers in the world today are 11.9 million, and Human Rights Watch states that the figure can be as high as 14 million. The number of internally displaced persons, that is people who are still remaining within their country but cannot live in their homes, is 23.6 million people, the estimate. That's almost 24 million people. And note that the newly internally displaced persons match the homeless from this disaster, over 5 million people. Throughout the world, tens of millions of people are displaced and homeless because of war and the privations of these imperialist sponsored wars.
Well, Maya, the generalization of poverty and of oppression and of disaster is a specific feature of the crisis of humanity and the system that is inflicting these calamities upon it. But I want to look specifically at the meaning of this calamity in the directly affected areas before we go on to the larger global question. Interpress on January 3rd published an article called Military Offensive On in Tsunami Hit Aceh. Sunny Ubaraj reports, while volunteers, relief workers, and families are collecting and searching for bodies in Indonesia's tsunami-stricken Aceh province, Indian soldiers have escalated their offensive against rebels. International human rights groups state that the military is hindering the delivery of badly needed humanitarian aid to survivors of the world's worst natural disaster in 40 years. Delays by the Indonesian government in allowing international access to Aceh has needlessly cost precious lives. International and Indonesian organizations need unrestricted access to Aceh, said the U.S.-based Nonviolence International in a statement. But what we're looking at here is the following, as the article makes clear. The government, which had put the province under martial law on May 19, 2003, declaring a state of emergency 1 year later, has carried out the following. Quote, under the civil emergency, the Indonesian military played a leading role and there's been no cutback in the level of military operations right through the present crisis. All eyes are on the government and whether it will make use of the opportunity for reconciliation, but while they are making these noises, there are two operations that are being carried out. One is the impediment to any humanitarian aid reaching this population, and the second is a full-blown military onslaught on the very victims of this calamity. nor is that restricted to Banda Aceh. The New Left Front, a group in a statement signed by the group's leader, Dr. Vikram Ramabahu Karunarathne, issued in Colombo Monday, condemned the rapid introduction of foreign troops into Sri Lanka under the guise of helping the tsunami victims. In a strongly worded statement, the New Left Front stated that the United States has its own agenda for gaining a foothold with designs to suppress the LTTE and to destroy the Tamil Liberation Front on behalf of local capitalist rulers. And the statement describes the contingent of Marines that arrived by aircraft, and another 1,500 U.S. Marines coming into Sri Lanka as foreign under the guise of foreign military aid, who are undertaking, in fact, an operation against the rebels themselves. Under the guise of humanitarian aid, the military is at work for a very different purpose.
The military is at work, Ralph, and perhaps you want to go into this further.
The disaster, Alan Nairn reports, is killing thousands in Aceh, and the Indian military has been doing that for years. Activists now say that the Indonesian military is using this disaster as a cover to further the killing of Achenese, and that the Pentagon is using this disaster as an opportunity to restore aid to the Indonesian military, which was blocked after the massacre in East Timor in 1999. So again, death and devastation, exploitation of the disaster itself to further the subjugation of the victim population. It is the nature of capitalism. It is the nature of the system. It is the reason why the military is the prime mover in this. It is the explanation for the failure to alert. It is the clear and evident reason for allowing this calamity to unfold and to devastate an impoverished population in these areas. The better to further predetermined ends where there is oil, where there is rebellion, where there is poverty, where there is misery, where there is disaffection.
Ralph, let us return to the notion of the militarization, because this relates directly on the relief aid. An article appeared in The Guardian January 3rd. $2 billion pledged, but will the world keep its promises? UN warns West could renege on aid. This is an article by John Vidal and Jamie Wilson that was republished on Common Dreams. The United Nations yesterday warned that huge promises of aid from rich countries to the Asia tsunami crisis might not be fulfilled, as some countries use dubious methods to appear more generous than they really are. Charities and international bodies say they fear that much of the money pledged so far to help the emergency in southern Asia may not materialize because governments traditionally renege on their humanitarian pledges. According to the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, which is leading the response to the disaster, the amount promised by countries and international banks stood at under $2 billion after a verbal pledge made by the Japanese Prime Minister of $500 million, making it the largest pledge, and $530 million from the World Bank and the Asian Development Bank. Robert Smith, the OCHA spokesman, told The Guardian, quote, "We should be very cautious about these figures. Let's put it this way. Large-scale disasters tend to result in mammoth pledges, which do not always materialize in their entirety. The figures look much higher than they really are. What will end up on the ground will be much less." And he goes on to explain, but Rudolf Müller, also of the OCHA, is actually much more precise. Müller says, "There is definitely double accounting going on, and this is where, Ralph, we refer to the military. A lot of the money will be swallowed up by the military or will have been diverted from existing loans." And this is what we have to note in terms of the $2 billion of aid. Ralph.
Maya, the aid, as you describe it, which is essentially a cover for a military operation, can be discussed in various ways. Initially, the Bush people talked about the munificent sum of $400,000, and then they went up to $15,000. What you're really, $15 million, which someone pointed out is like a toilet on a B-1 bomber. The billions of profits that one of these rapacious companies extracts from Iraq and from the oil speculation, in comparison with the nominal sums of money that are given for putative aid, reveal it all. Over 1 billion children are affected by poverty and conflict, according to UNICEF. 1 billion children live under the threat of poverty and disaster. That's a permanent condition. It's not just a specific response to a disaster. It is the generalized disaster of a life expectancy that has fallen below 40 in Africa. Consider what are the actual consequences of this system and its ongoing manifestations throughout the world. 2.5 million people killed in Angola. 1.5 million killed in Mozambique. 4 million killed in the Congo. 2.5 million in Rwanda and Burundi. Over 1 million in Somalia. The beat goes on across this planet.
And as we speak, Ralph, over 5 million people are displaced in the Sudan.
We are dealing with a crisis of humanity that is the direct consequence of a system that exists to exploit, which uses all its resources to sustain the military state, which delegitimizes the state and strips it of its role as a primary instrument of social improvement and social betterment. The NGOization, the non-governmental organization's role in providing what are essential services and providing putative aid, in denying that role to a state responsible to its citizens, is part of the reduction to the state as nothing but the coercive instrument of the handful of people who control it in their own interests, the 1% of the population that owns 95% of the wealth in the United States, that same population that dominates the world and inflicts mass misery and poverty and starvation and hunger, that same ruling group that has been, with sublime indifference, prepared to watch as this disaster engulfed the population of Thailand, Sri Lanka, and India, with full advanced knowledge of the tsunami, sufficient to warn Diego Garcia and sufficient to prevent them from picking up the telephone to alert one single person of authority in the countries concerned. The crisis of the tsunami, the disaster that is unfolding for its population, is in fact a crisis of humanity in the hands of a system that has nothing to offer it but death and destruction.
You have been listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoen
and Maya Schoen. Our program will be up on our website, www.takingaim.info. You can reach us at 707-552-9995 or at takingaim@wbai.org or takingaim@pacbell.net. We'll be with you next week.